is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultchin Ford. Bird Cultchin Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Bearcast on Sikkim 365 Radio, Sikkim365.com. The final weekend of October, and the Baylor Bears are back from the off week as they get set for a showdown with the Texas Longhorns this Saturday at McLean Stadium. Craig Smoak with you as always, Sikkim 365 Radio, Sikkim 365 team reporter and writer, and joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, Director of Broadcasting, also team and recruiting reporter for Sikkim365.com. And Grayson, a big one coming up this weekend. Baylor coming off the bye week, Texas coming off the bye week. Before we get into a couple of stories and also the matchup itself, how are we doing this week?
Yeah, doing good. It's been a fun week, a bye week, a chance to kind of reflect and look back on some things and also, you know, look into recruiting a lot more. And I think that's what the Baylor staff did a lot this week, and I think now everybody's ready to just focus exclusively on Texas. This is a big matchup and an opportunity here for both coaches to prove something coming off of a bye week, and I think that's really important for any head coach to really be successful coming off of bye weeks when you have extra time to prepare.
Yeah, I kind of wrote in my latest piece that this is a fork in the road for both teams. For Texas, I mean, they're trying to avoid going to 500, and you know, if they lose to Baylor, they still got to play Iowa State, and they still got a couple games, so they're, you know, flirting with disappointment in a way in year one of Steve Sarkisian, given the way the season started off. And really, the Arkansas game is the only one that's gotten away from them entirely. They could very well be sitting in Baylor's shoes right now at 6-1, but can't finish games. And Arkansas just beat them from start to finish for Baylor, the blemish in Stillwater, and that's it. Otherwise, they look pretty dang good outside of a couple, you know, like the Texas State game, just letting that kind of, you know, last for a little too long. But for the most part, they've looked really good. So these are two teams that have shown that they can, you know, win games and they can be competitive in the Big 12. But before we dive fully into that, one big note from the Big 12 this week is the coaching carousel has started. Matt Wells is no longer the head coach at Texas Tech, relieved of duties on Monday after a bad loss over the weekend to K-State, in which Texas Tech had a 14-point lead at three different points, including at halftime, got shut out in the second half, lose to K-State at home. And, you know, I guess they just finally saw enough. And despite the fact that they've won five games this year, Grayson, they are moving on and going ahead and throwing their name into the hat for the Jeff Trailers or the Sonny Dykeses or whoever you want to throw into that loop. But your thoughts first and foremost on the first coaching change we've seen in the Big 12 this season. And Baylor hasn't played Tech yet, so they will face a Sonny Cumbie-led Red Raiders squad here coming up soon. But your thoughts on Matt Wells no longer at Texas Tech?
Yeah, we talked about this at being very high potential of happening last week, you know, when we talked a little bit about the Big 12. And I think it's really important to note that, you know, Matt Wells is a guy who came in there and, like you've said on multiple occasions, never really established an identity, I don't think, nor do I think he established a culture at Texas Tech, and it really showed. They had an inability to finish games. At times, they couldn't score the ball. At times, they couldn't defend anything. And they decided to make a move. And honestly, I've been saying this for a long time, honestly, since the beginning of the year. I thought he'd be fired before the Baylor game, but I also, after seeing what Jeff Traylor's done at UTSA, I just think it's kind of the perfect storm. I think Texas Tech was sitting there going, okay, I don't think Matt Wells is the guy, and I think we see a guy who could potentially be a great fit for our program, and I personally do think Jeff Traylor is going to end up being the head coach at Texas Tech. Been kind of feeling that way for a while, especially with the year that he's had. And yeah, I think this is one of those situations where Tech's probably not going to win another football game the rest of the year. I think there's a chance they mail it in. And their offense hasn't looked great, so I don't think Sonny Cumbie is going to go in there and all of a sudden they're going to be putting up 70 points a game for this team. So it's a big move, and I think it's one looking ahead at Baylor's schedule where you go, man, I feel even better about that Tech matchup at the end of the year. And yeah, I think a lot of the teams that get to play Tech now going forward are probably going to feel pretty good about that matchup.
Yeah, Jeff Traylor seems like he'd probably be the odds-on favorite, but you never know. Sonny Dykes, he's already come out and said, I'm not going to talk about any other jobs, but we know that they'll at least reach out to him. There's always the possibility of Kendall Briles or a Jeff Lebby. I mean, you have to at least consider those names when you're talking about Texas ties and coordinators that could be looking to make the move to a head coaching job. So, you know, maybe that's an opportunity for them. And, you know, maybe there's some wild card we're not thinking about, but they've got a pretty good list of candidates to choose from. I think whoever they hire, if they were to hire, you know, Traylor or Dykes, obviously that would be big. Lebby or Briles, I'm not sure how big that would, like, be splash-wise, but I think they'd be good hires. You'd have an identity with any of the names that I've mentioned. And like I said, maybe there's an outside candidate, but it does seem like Traylor and Dykes are kind of like the two, especially Traylor, the big ones that Red Raiders fans are looking at and just the most likely given the landscape.
Yeah, and then that would open up a UTSA job. And North Texas looks like it might be open as well. Yeah. And that's when you start looking at guys, you know, maybe a Joey McGuire.
Sure.
Maybe he becomes an option. I don't think he'll be an option for the Tech job. I don't think, but we've seen weirder. I mean, if it's a good fit, it's a good fit. So I know a lot of Red Raider fans I've been hearing talking about Art Briles, and I'm like, guys, that's just not happening. So whatever, they can believe what they want. But Kendall would be interesting, I think. But yeah, I think at this point, Trey, if you're going to fire your coach midseason, it's because you have candidates in mind, in my opinion. I don't think you just make the move just to make the move. So I think Traylor and Dykes are two names to definitely look at. I think Traylor is the guy to target just because Dykes has had his opportunity at a Power 5 school and was okay at Cal. You know, he's had multiple stops, been a lot better at SMU, but Traylor's never had the opportunity at a Power 5 school. So I personally think he might give them a higher ceiling, but who knows? Dykes has figured things out at SMU, that's for sure.
Yep. Meanwhile, Baylor had no game last week, so they were on the recruiting trail. Before we get into Texas, your notes, I guess, or thoughts on Baylor being on the recruiting trail last week?
Yeah, it was a great week, I think. They went out, got to see a lot of the commits, which I think was the priority going into the week. How many of the commits can we see? How many can, you know, make an impact with? And that's the whole point early in this, kind of where they're at right now, is making sure the 2022 class stays together. And I think they've done a great job of that. I already have a visitor list for this week posted on the website, on the premium side, and a lot of the commits are coming. I just think it shows a lot when multiple weeks you got guys who have been to three or four home games. I mean, that's a big deal. That shows buy-in and shows commitment to the program, and they just solidified that even more on the trail this week. They went out and saw Justin DeLeon out in Kingsville and Isaiah Crawford out in Post. Those are their two 2023 commits. So also did a nice job there. And then they kind of, the rest of the week, I guess you could say, was all about going and talking to the priority guys in the 2023 class. And honestly, it's not even just the priority guys. It has a lot to do with location and how they could make it work with their travel schedule after seeing commits. And I think they ended up doing a really nice job, made a good impact, got to see a lot of their high priority guys. And overall, I think the staff would say it was a very productive and excellent week of recruiting and getting out there on the trail, which was something they couldn't do last year during the bye week. So big deal, and I think this is going to help the 2023 class going forward. And if they keep winning, I mean, they're going to put themselves in a great position to have that top 25 class in 2023 that I've kind of been thinking was going to happen.
Yeah, so in terms of 2022, what is even on the radar right now?
Yeah, so it's actually a great question. They put out an offer this past week to Paul Oyewale out of Houston Langham Creek High School. So he's a defensive lineman. And it's very clear that defensive line is an area they need to address. Devontae Tizino out of Clean Ellison is a guy on the radar. And then, of course, Calvin Dinkins, who came on his official visit when all the other guys did. He's out of Mississippi, Lake High School in Mississippi. So those three guys on the defensive line are on the radar. I think they will for sure get at least one of them is kind of the direction I'm leaning in right now. And then outside of that, I think they maybe have one spot, maybe two spots after the defensive line addition. And I think one will probably go to cornerback and then the other will go to best available. And so that's kind of where they're at right now. Kamari Terrell is a name that we've mentioned a lot out of Clean Shoemaker. He'd be a great defensive back add. And then, of course, if you have kind of looked at Twitter, or if you're on the premium side, a lot of cornerbacks have been invited to Baylor games this year who don't have offers. So I think that makes it pretty apparent that they would like to add a cornerback in this class. They already have Reggie Bush, but I think adding another one would be very beneficial to the class. And then I think they want to have one spot open for a best available type guy going forward. They're still on the radar with a couple kind of those high-end targets. And who knows, maybe if the season continues to go the way that it does, maybe you win a Big 12 championship, maybe you're able to get back in with one of those upper echelon guys that you have a good relationship with, but maybe they're on the fence of, oh, do I want to go to Baylor or do I want to go to Alabama? Or, you know what I mean? Something like that. But if you have a great year, you might be able to sway the mind of a high-profile guy, and that could be kind of the cherry on top to this really good 2022 class.
Well, interesting to see Killeen getting so much love. I mean, they typically have some talent. It seems there's a little bit more down there right now than there has been in the last few years. And, you know, LSU had recruited Killeen previously. Guys like Rashawn Thornton, who's now at Texas, actually, was from Killeen originally and went to LSU, played for Dave Aranda, now playing for Steve Sarkisian. So, yeah, there's been some big programs roll through Killeen. And they've got some teams playing well right now. So, good to see that.
Yeah, all of Central Texas has – I mean, we talked about this probably a month ago, just the talent in Central Texas right now. If you look at Connolly with Trey Wisner and Kobe Black, Temple, of course, with Mikel Harrison-Pilot, who's a major priority in the 2023 class, Killeen, obviously a lot of high-end recruits there as well. It's been very good to see that, and Baylor's capitalizing on that. They're recruiting the area really hard and really well, and they just need to finish it because we've seen in the past they've missed out on some of those guys in previous years.
Well, they got to go on the road and carry a 6-1 record with them, so got to, you know, puff their chest out a little bit as far as feeling good about, you know, wearing the brand and what the brand's been doing as of late. A little bit harder last year hitting that recruiting trail because there wasn't one, and also because even if you did, you know, what are you really showing in year one with the results last year? It would have been a little difficult. They managed their way around that, but now you can really go out and do some damage because you are 6-1 and potential to be 7-1, and you're right in the mix of the Big 12. So as it stands right now, Grayson, I mean, Baylor pretty much controls their own destiny. I mean, if they win out, Oklahoma State now has the loss to Iowa State. So they're still, you know, a head-to-head above Baylor, but they got to play Oklahoma. Oklahoma's got to play Baylor and Iowa State and Oklahoma State. So, you know, Baylor beats Oklahoma, hey, they're above Oklahoma. So, I mean, to me, it's very simple. You beat all the teams on your schedule. You have all the tiebreakers except for Oak State, and something has to give with Oak State and Oklahoma. So, Baylor sits in a really good spot coming out of the bye week. But, you know, Steve Sarkisian off of 2 weeks of preparation, I'm sure some UT fans are thinking the same thing with Dave Aranda and his staff after 2 weeks of preparation. But these teams come in, as I said earlier, at a crossroads. Baylor can stay on the course they've been on, winning football games, competing for the Big 12 title, or, you know, take their second blemish, and that would really throw things for a loop, and they'd need some help to get to their ultimate goal in Dallas at the end of the year, Arlington. For Texas, go left, and maybe you're back on track with a win in Waco. Certainly things are trending in a much better direction than they have the last couple weeks, but if you take a right or stay on the same course you've been on, three losses in a row, and you're suddenly in a lot of trouble, and you're pretty much out of the Big 12 race. So that's why I keep calling this a fork in the road game, because these two teams are, one of them's going to go one way or the other. Texas has a lot of talent, obviously. And Baylor, you know, good news schedule-wise. I mean, not only are they jumping up a little bit in the top 25 this week, it's 16 and 18 now, respectively, but Iowa State's back in the polls. You have a win over them, but they're now at 22 and 23. BYU's back in the AP poll. You've got a win over them. And the team you lost to is right in front of you, basically, in the rankings. One spot in front of you in the AP, and then two spots in front of you in the coaches' poll. So some good Big 12 representation. And the team you have yet to play is currently number four in the country. So that's kind of how the schedule sets up coming out of the bye week. So nice resume when you look at it. You know, a couple top 25 wins, only lost the top 25 loss, and then you've got another opportunity for another one coming up here in a couple of weeks. But all this is for naught if they don't beat Texas. Like, that's all that matters this week. So let's dive in. The Longhorns coming to Waco. What are your thoughts on what you see from them, offense, defense, et cetera?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I mean, this is a huge week for Baylor, and primarily because the top five teams in the Big 12 have clearly separated themselves. And so this is one of those games where if Baylor wins, you're exactly right. This pushes Texas out of the top five and makes it a top four in the conference. So, yeah, it's huge and key in that way. If Texas does win, they stay in the top five and obviously make things much more interesting. But, yeah, the Longhorns, you know, 174 points allowed or 149 points allowed this year. That's not good. That's not a good number. That's not where you want to be as a defense. And they're giving up 201 yards on the ground per game. That's 115th in the country. And those two areas where they're giving up points, they're giving up yards on the ground, it makes it really tough to win games. And the thing that's really baffling about them is how much better they've been in the first half than the second half. And to me, that has everything to do with their inability to stop the run. Because late in games, your defense wears down. If you can't get off the field, you can't get stops, and the other team is churning out yards and time, it really puts you behind the eight ball. And that's what has happened to Texas in many of their matchups this year that haven't gone their way. When you talk about Oklahoma, when you talk about Oklahoma State, when you talk about Arkansas, those three teams all had success running the football. And unfortunately for Texas, they're running into a team in Baylor who can absolutely run the football and have proven it time and time again this year, even against top 20 defenses, which Texas is not. And when Baylor has played teams that are not in the top 20 in run defense, more times than not, Baylor has been able to hang 300 rushing yards on them. And that is where I think that's where the biggest issue is going to be for Texas. Now, if they come out of the bye week and can somehow figure that out and hold Baylor to, you know, 150 yards or 200 yards, it gives them a much more realistic chance. If they come into Waco and they give up 300 yards rushing to Baylor, which could happen, they're not leaving here with a win. There's no way they're leaving here with a win. And so I think that's where I'm looking at that matchup on the defensive side for Texas. Can they keep this Baylor running attack at least contained? You know, can they keep Abram Smith and Tristan Ebner from, you know, really just wearing on them throughout the game? And I think that's probably a focus that they've had during the bye week. How do we solve this problem in the run game? And how do we solve this problem of not being able to put up points in the second half and not be able to stop teams in the second half? I think both of those things, the second half and their ability to stop the run, are going to be huge factors in this game.
Yeah, I mean, Bijan's the end-all, be-all for them. You know, obviously, though, the big plays are something that Aranda talked about being, you know, problematic as well. Xavier Worthy is going to be an issue. Joshua Moore, you know, they got some, you know, every once in a while, throw it out to the tight end. Brewer, yeah, I mean, they got some, and the Alabama transfer starting to play a little bit more in the backfield. I forget his name, but they're starting to work him in behind Bijan a little bit as well. Yeah, Keelan Robinson. So, yeah, it should be a tough, and, you know, I do think Baylor would have been better off playing them last week, you know, and not having this extra time. So I'm very curious to see kind of what wrinkles both sides are throwing. The chess match part of this, you got a defensive genius like Aranda and an offensive genius like Sarkisian. And then some very good assistants, you know, mixed in there as well. This is going to be a fun little back and forth between these two teams.
Yeah, it definitely will be. And, I mean, as far as personnel and offensive side, I mean, Texas is averaging 41.5 points per game. That's ninth in the country. They can fill it up. The issue is a lot of those numbers are skewed by the fact that they scored 58 on Rice, 70 on Texas Tech. And then, of course, that huge matchup against Oklahoma, they scored 48. But if you look in their other matchups, I mean, Louisiana, who's pretty good, they scored 38 on. But that was the beginning of the year, and that was a team that they were just able to run the ball. They didn't even play Casey Thompson. They won like that. So, I mean, that's in their bag of tricks if they play like that. But I don't think that's who they are. They only scored 21 against Arkansas, only 32 against TCU, and then only 24 against Oklahoma State. So I think against Baylor, it's very important, in my opinion, that the Bears are able to contain, like you said, those explosive plays. Because what you need to make Texas do is force Casey Thompson to drive them down the field methodically, make them get first downs on first downs on first downs, not what they did against BYU, where they were giving up just huge chunk plays to those BYU receivers. And I'll tell you right now, those BYU receivers are not as talented as Xavier Worthy or Joshua Moore. They're just not. I mean, they're good, but they're not nearly as explosive as those two guys are. And because of that ability, it does make me concerned about Baylor's secondary a little bit. And if you're going to put them in one-on-one situations because you want to take away Bijan Robinson, you're going to give up chunk plays. But it's just a matter of when you give up those chunk plays, do they result in 40-yard receptions or do they result in 70-yard touchdowns? That's the key for them to kind of hold them down and, again, force them to score in the red zone where they have struggled this season quite a bit. So, yeah, if I'm Baylor, force Casey Thompson to beat you. And on the flip side, if you look at what they've done against the good teams on their schedule for the most part outside of Oklahoma, I think it's a reasonable expectation to think that Baylor can hold this Texas team under 30 points. And if they're able to do that at McLean Stadium, that should give their offense plenty of opportunities to win this game. But I do think it will be competitive, and I think you're exactly right. Facing Sarkisian off the bye instead of getting to face him, you know, when they're already kind of in that mode of, oh, we lost again. Oh, we lost again. They got to go to the bye and kind of regroup a little bit. So I'm curious how that kind of factors out.
Yeah, a random mention that, you know, the creepers are going to be big in this game. You know, being able to play well off the edges are going to be huge in this game. As far as containing the run. And, yeah, I mean, they're going to have to tackle well. Bijan's not easy to bring down. He will break a lot of tackles, and this team's going to have to bring him down. You know, they did do a good job against BYU of giving up the big pass but not letting it break through for, you know, full-on score. If BYU had hit on their big plays, I mean, that's like four touchdowns. Yep. And that would have been the only four plays they hit all week but or all game, but it would have been 28 points.
And so, now you're in the game.
Yeah, and now maybe they win that thing. So, yeah, they were some just tackles away from that being a whole different game against BYU. And Xavier Worthy, like you said, is way better than anybody else that they faced to this point. So, yeah, that's going to be a challenge. And this secondary, you know, they've shown that's why Aranda talked about it. You talked about it. Is, you know, they have shown an affinity for giving up those plays and just kind of keeping it in check. But, man, you're going to be on full alert this week, and especially early on. I mean, that's the thing, is they jump out early on you, and they just don't know how to finish it out all the time, at least in two of their losses. Arkansas just beat them up. Them down and beat them up, and it wasn't close, and it wasn't like they couldn't hold a lead. The two Oklahoma games, the two Oklahoma schools, those were just blowing leads. I mean, that's all that was, and that's the difference in their entire year. It's the difference in their entire year. They should not be unbeaten, but they should – or they could have a case for only having one loss at this point.
I mean, they're a quality team.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think people forget that just because
they look at the record.
Right, and you think about the Arkansas game and you go, oh, man. Well, I think that was a case of both teams didn't know who they really were, because if you've watched Arkansas recently, they are much worse than they were at the beginning of the year, and Texas is, I think, better than they were at the beginning of the year probably after getting Casey Thompson more seasoning. But, yeah, I think – it's very interesting. Casey Thompson averaging, you know, 9.8 yards per attempt. I mean, that's a pretty high number. So they're willing to take shots deep, but he does have 5 interceptions this year. And so I think there's room there for Baylor to force a couple turnovers in this game. Baylor, obviously, the turnover margin, they're inside the top 10. They've been really good at forcing turnovers. They've taken the ball away 12 times, only lost 5 turnovers this year. Texas, on the other hand, they've gained 11 and have lost 7. So they're at number 32 in the country. So both teams have been pretty good at it. Baylor has been great at it. And so that's an area to definitely watch, I think, in this one, especially at home. Baylor's been really good at forcing turnovers at home.
So the Texas offense, you know, Casey Thompson can make some plays with his feet and with his arm, although, you know, his status, I wouldn't be shocked if he struggles if we see a Hudson Card appearance, because there has been some discussion about Casey Thompson and that starting quarterback job. So we'll see what Baylor can do to factor in there, maybe make that even more interesting. But if you're not careful, he can't hurt you. He can hurt you with his feet. He can hurt you with his arm, like I said, and they've got good skill guys. Special teams, Aranda cited as maybe their strongest unit, but defensively, there's been a little bit of struggle there. They're getting DeMarvion Overshown back this week after he had a concussion a couple of weeks ago. So he's now back in one of their better playmakers. And, you know, there's been some struggle against the run. Obviously, we saw that early on against Arkansas, and they've been a little bit banged up front as well. So what are you looking at on the defensive side of the ball for Texas against this RVO attack for Baylor?
Yeah, I mean, they're 115th in the country against the run. Now, I know a lot of that came against Arkansas, but a lot of that came a couple weeks ago against Oklahoma as well. They were getting gashed in the run game. TCU ran on them as well. And Baylor's probably, I would say Baylor's probably the best running team that they will have faced. Honestly, I mean, if I think, I mean, I know Oklahoma's very explosive in the run game, but consistently, I don't know. It's probably pretty close with Abram and Tristan Ebner in this offensive line. So, again, it's just hard to imagine that Texas can keep Baylor from running the ball well. What they can do, though, is if they score quickly early in the game and force Baylor out of their run game, force them to have to throw the ball, that would be something that I'm sure Texas is going to try doing this one. But defensively, I mean, a lot of 4- and 5-star guys, guys with a lot of talent. A lot of them haven't played up to that level that I guess people probably thought they were going to play at. But DeMarvin Overshawn is one of the guys who has. I think he's taken that turn a little bit. Every time I turn on the TV, it seems like he's making a play. Now, he is out of position at times and gives up some plays, but he also is a playmaker for them on the defensive side. Anthony Cook was a guy Baylor recruited pretty heavily. He's another top guy that they have out there at the defensive back position, cornerback specifically. B.J. Foster, he's got 2 interceptions. He leads the team in that category. He's been pretty good. And then Deshaun Jameson is kind of probably one of those X factors in the return game. 10 returns, 241 yards. He was the guy, I believe, who was chosen ahead of Ebner.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, ahead of Ebner. That was clearly a bad decision because Ebner has that return against Iowa State, but he's still very dangerous and a guy who can definitely impact the game on the defensive side and in the return game. Up front is where they've been kind of disappointing up to this point in the season, I would say. Alfred Collins has 2 sacks. He leads the way for them in that category, along with Ovi Oghofu. He's another one up front. Tavondre Sweat, Moro Jomo. They have a lot of guys that they throw out there, but none of them have really taken a huge step and been unstoppable. I would say Alfred is probably their best defensive lineman. But again, when you're forcing linebackers like Luke Brockermeyer to have 54 tackles at this point in the season, you're allowing guys to get to that second level. And then when you talk about, you know, B.J. Foster, Anthony Cook, Deshaun Jameson, all with over 25 tackles, that's a lot of tackles for your cornerbacks and your safety. So again, I think that's where Baylor can definitely take advantage. The area that scares you with Texas, though, is what has happened to Baylor over the past, what, 6 years outside of 2019, where they just somehow come out against Texas and can't block anybody. And Texas, their talent just seems to rise to the top in those matchups. And it just, last year it happened. Obviously, Baylor's offense was terrible. But in 2019, Baylor finally got the better of them. But even then, it was, what, 21-0 should have been the final score. They scored a late touchdown. But again, that was the first time they really imposed their will on them in recent seasons, in my opinion, at least going back to, what, 2016? Even 2016, when they had an explosive offense, they struggled at times in that game.
2016's when all hell broke loose after they lost to Texas.
Right, right. And so it's
that's when they were 6-0 and then lost to Texas because Hasty fumbled, and then the entire season fell apart.
Right, and then you go to 2015, and Baylor found their offense in the second half, but they were completely shut down in the first half against Texas and lost that game as well. So yeah, it's just been a weird phenomenon that for whatever reason, when they play Texas, and it has gone back through history for a while. I mean, even 2014, 2013, those games were closer than they should have been. Yeah. And so it's just,
they play down to Texas or do play up to Texas. They don't just play Baylor's game against Texas outside of that one 2019 year. I mean, yeah. Other than that, the entire time I've been here, they play down to them. Because more often than, I mean, now at this point, it's probably evened out to where Texas has been a favorite as many times because, you know, the whole 5 year of scandal thing that Baylor went through. But outside of that, when I first got here, they were the favorites pretty much like the first 3 or 4 years. They never just beat them up. And, you know, like even Floyd Casey, Mack Brown's final hurrah.
2013, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they, like some fans I talked to, like, yeah, it was convincing and they were never really in trouble, but it wasn't like they just blew him out of the water. It was still like a Texas kind of lingered thing, even though Baylor was in control. So it was a lot like 2019 in that regard. It's just like the score wasn't really indicative maybe of how the game went. But if the shoe was on the other foot, Texas would win that game like 50-10.
Yeah.
You know, and Baylor's had opportunities to win games like that, and they never do. They never just beat them and blow their doors off. And they're not going to this year because both teams are good enough this year where I'm not expecting – anything other than a pretty close game when it's, all is said and done.
It's pretty crazy. Baylor was really bad last year, and somehow the score looked better. Wasn't it 26-3
at
one point?
Like that.
Yeah, so it's just one of those weird things where I don't know what it is, but Texas finds a way to keep this game close. Even when Baylor looks like they're just going to blow them out, somehow I think Texas just plays up to Baylor for whatever reason. They just really get up for this game and really – don't want to lose to Baylor, and I think that's definitely a factor to keep in mind, especially coming off of a bye week when Texas is trending down and Baylor's trending up. It's going to be very key that Dave Aranda gets these guys focused and ready throughout the week, and we've seen him do it time and time again. He's got to do it again coming off of a bye week, because like I've said, that's big to know about a coach is how they do coming off of a bye week, because it's very similar to what happens when you're going into a bowl game, or very similar to what happens when you're going in to games where you do have a break in there before you play.
Yep, so offensively, how does Casey Thompson look? Is he hitting on the deep ball? If he is, then Baylor's going to be, you know, in a little bit of trouble, especially, you know, if they can't respond, especially. So Texas out of the gates. They start fast. You know, that all brakes, or was all gas, no brakes, although it's all brakes, no gas at times too, but that all gas, no brakes. I mean, they're going to have to contend with that, like Aranda called it, that first wave, that initial wave that Texas does every week for the most part. They've done it even in their losses. They get up and they just can't hold on to it. So you got to withstand that. And you got to, you know, obviously keep Bijan in control as much as you possibly can. And Xavier Worthy, same thing. And Casey Thompson, if he's running a little bit, same thing for him. And, you know, offensively, I just think they've got to execute. If they just play well offensively and do their jobs and don't hurt themselves with penalties or just bad mistakes, I feel like they can move the football in Texas. But, you know, a lot's going to come down to Gary and what kind of throws he can make. Because I think they can run. It's just they can run a lot easier if he's making throws. So that kind of – that's the same thing for both quarterbacks, really. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
Both quarterbacks got to have the same deal in this game. Special teams, I mean, both can hit you pretty good in that area. Both kicking and returning, if you're not careful. So, I think this is a pretty, you know, evenly matched game. Just different philosophies from the head coaches, you know, offensive versus defensive. But outside of that, this should be one heck of a contest in my mind. I think this should be a very competitive game on Saturday. And obviously the winner will, you know, take a big step forward in the Big 12. Texas will still need a lot of help, even if they win this weekend. But they'll still be alive. They lose, they're pretty much done. And Baylor, with the second Big 12 loss, it would be tough. It would be tough to kind of get back in the mix. Even though you still play Oklahoma coming up, it would two losses, that might be kind of tricky to get back in. Right now, you're in control for the most part, so you don't want to lose grip of that.
Yeah, you don't. And really, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think the team that makes it to the Big 12 championship, the second team, I mean, that's assuming Oklahoma goes undefeated. We'll see. They still got to play Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Iowa State. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens there. But I do think a team gets in with two losses into the Big 12 championship.
I think they probably do, but I just, you know.
It's a matter of which two, though, because obviously Baylor loses the tiebreak to Oklahoma State, but they would win the tiebreak against Iowa State.
Right.
And in this situation, they might win the tiebreak against Oklahoma as well. So just something to think about. I think even if they go 7-2 in conference? Nine games? Yeah, I still think that they could find themselves in.
They could, but again, that's where, like when I was writing about this, it was much simpler to just say they control their own destiny, just went out. I mean, that's like,
for sure.
That's really as simple. And I know, and like I even said, like that's way easier said than done. I realize that. But rather than like, all right, if you have two and you have two, and just win out and you're in the championship game, like period. Because the Iowa State tiebreaker is yours, Oklahoma State, like something has to give there. So if you finish with one loss and it's only to Oklahoma State, you're either rematching them or you're probably playing Oklahoma or Iowa State for the title.
For sure.
And that's as simple as it gets. But, yeah, there's the opportunity for, like, two losses, and then, like, four head-to-heads come. You know, forget all that. Just went out.
And if you think about it, you know, if Baylor wins this weekend, I mean, think about their schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, TCU looks terrible. TCU just lost to West Virginia.
Now, we know they will play their best game of the year, but Baylor should win that game.
Baylor should win that game.
Yes.
They play K-State at K-State. K-State's not – they're not very good right now.
I don't think they're better than Baylor, no.
I don't even think it's really all that close. Baylor should beat them. Tech should be – there is no way Baylor should lose to Tech at this point. So then you're just talking about the Oklahoma game. I mean, it is very conceivable that this team finds themselves 10-2 or 11-1.
That's what I'm saying.
It's very conceivable. And if they go 11-1, I think they're in the Big 12 championship. Oklahoma State always loses to Oklahoma.
Yeah, so. They always do. Although this year, I do like their chances way better than I have in a long time because, you know, if Oklahoma struggles on offense, creep up, I mean, they will against that defense. Like, they're not just going to. Anyway, that's weeks from now. But, like, Oklahoma State's got a real chance to win that game this year with the way they're playing. But, yeah, it's the simplest route is beat Texas, and you are in cruise control – not cruise control, but you are in control of your destiny. Yeah. And you lose to Texas, and you've got to – then you have to win out. And then you also probably have to hope for, like, you need Iowa State to beat Oklahoma, and then you need Oklahoma State to beat Oklahoma, and you need to beat Oklahoma. You know, like, the odds of them taking three losses in the last 5 weeks aren't great, but – but, yeah, that's the kind of scenario you would get into. So that's why I view this game, not only because it's a rivalry game, even though Texas fans don't consider it that, I understand, but it is. And you've got the whole Big 12 bad blood, and you've got, you know, the Sark versus a random matchup. And there's so many intriguing things here. But to me, in terms of the season and the fork in the road that I brought up earlier, that's what I mean by that. Baylor, they win this game, they are just – chugging ahead. I mean, they just smash the gas and continue moving forward and feel pretty damn good about the rest of their schedule. If you don't win, you still feel good about this team, but everything's a lot more difficult. And every percentage of this possible title or this possible bowl game, they all go down pretty dramatically.
Yeah, and if Baylor wins their next two, they're going to be a top 10 team and they're going to have College Game Day with Oklahoma because Oklahoma plays Texas Tech this week and then has a bye week. Yep. It will be College Game Day. And Baylor will get an opportunity to rebound from what happened in 2019 when they should have beaten Oklahoma at McLean Stadium in that one. A lot riding on this game. Of course, Baylor still would have to play TCU, and TCU is the same way as Texas. Even when TCU stinks, they somehow just hang in there with Baylor. So lots left to do, but man, this is a big matchup. This, like you said, it's a domino effect for both teams, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I've been viewing it. And, you know, it's only possible because Baylor got their way to 6-1. And, you know, for Texas, they are in the position that Baylor doesn't want to be in, where you're like, okay, we have to win all these games, and then we need this and this and this and this and this to happen, and then we'll be in Dallas. Baylor has a great opportunity. Beating Texas, even though they're not ranked right now, would be a big deal. I mean, just bragging rights alone, they're probably not going to be at McLean too much more, folks. I mean, this is probably their next to last visit for, like, the next 15 years. I mean, truly. I don't see them scheduling a home-and-home with Baylor, right away as SEC members. So, you know, you can maybe – and you know what? The go-around in 2023, there's nothing guaranteed about that. I know what Bob Bowlsby said, but who knows what the world even looks like in 2023. So we're for sure getting Texas and Waco this year and should get them again in 2 years for a final time. But who knows what 2 years from now looks like I said. So, yeah, I mean, I got the Sharpie circled around this game like 10 times because it matters for a lot of different reasons, and it matters for pride, but it also matters for the standings and just what the rest of this way could look like. So a big, big opportunity for Texas to knock off Baylor, spoil their party, but a big opportunity for Baylor in front of their home crowd to really set themselves up nicely for this last month of the season. So, yeah, pretty important game. Anything else before we get into the mailbag?
No, let's dive in. We got some good questions this week, too.
Yeah, we do. Let's start off with Alpha Needle, buy or sell. Joey McGuire and Jacob Zeno join forces at UTSA to replace Jeff Traylor, who goes to Texas Tech.
I mean, that's so many moving parts to predict that. So I'm going to sell it just because that requires Traylor leaving, Joey getting the job at UTSA, and then also getting Jacob to UTSA. That's a lot of moving parts. So I'll sell all of those happening, but I could see Traylor going to Tech and Joey going to UTSA. I could definitely see those two situations.
Yeah, I can see that too. I'm not far off from buying that. I think Zeno's the one that throws me for a little bit of a loop. Although, hey, I mean, he's from San Antonio and, you know, obviously knows Joey McGuire. So if all those things were to happen, who the heck knows? But yeah, I'll sell that just because I don't bank on all three of those things happening. But you know what? Crazier things have also happened before. So, you know, I'm Joey McGuire's been great at Baylor. I know, though, he wants to be a head coach one day. Yeah. I mean, he's never made any bones about that. I mean, you don't go from being the longtime head coach at Cedar Hill to just want to be a position coach in college for the rest of your career. He made that move because he wanted to obviously learn more and be in the college game, but also because he wants to be a head coach one day. So
absolutely.
They've probably had him around here longer than anybody expected at this point, and he certainly turned down other opportunities to remain here. And I'm sure every Baylor fan would love for him to be here for forever. But, yeah, I mean, there's going to come a day where Texas State opens up again or, you know, somewhere in Texas, and eventually he's going to get that phone call.
You know, one thing I will add, if I changed the name from Jacob Zeno to Charlie Brewer, I'd be closer to buying it.
Okay. Yeah.
Just put it, I just, that would make a little more sense.
That would bum me out as a UTSA fan, but I mean, yeah, that would make a bit more sense. Hey, I love Charlie, but come on. That's not exactly inspiring anything at this point.
I know.
That's not exactly what Utah thought it was a few months ago, and they've already learned that lesson, right? So wish the wish him the best, but that just would not excite me personally. No, McGuire's head coach, though, that'd be cool. Or, you know, I'm sure, and Tech fans I know would love Traylor as head coach. Kendall Brown's in the starting lineup for men's basketball, first Big 12 conference game.
He's in the starting lineup first game of the season.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Yeah. I think he's a perfect fit for what they need at the four.
Yeah.
Or the three.
I'll buy that one. So you're buying that one. Apu is back at Baylor in 2022.
Buy.
Yeah, I'm buying that too. I don't know where he'd go. I mean, I know he likes BYU on Twitter a lot. For some reason that makes fans paranoid, but he's at Baylor. He's at Baylor because of Dave Aranda. The only fear I would have is that Dave Aranda left, and I'm not worried about that. So, Apu's back at Baylor in 2022. Buying that?
Yeah, buying that.
Braves win the World Series.
I'll buy it.
But I'm going to sell. Astros seem like they have the hot hand right now, and if anything, I'm trying to reverse curse. Moving on, Scotty B, the Baylor King. Do you believe the only thing scary about Texas defense is the ability that they have forced 11 turnovers so far this season?
The only thing scary. That is scary. I'm concerned a little bit with Baylor's, and I shouldn't be because, you know, they've proven that they can throw the ball and run the ball against Texas. But for some reason, I've seen Baylor play Texas a lot, and for whatever reason, the offense seems to stall when they play them. So I am a little bit concerned about the effectiveness they'll have in the passing game. And Baylor's roughest games this year have been when they've had to rely on the passing game, when the run game was completely a non-factor and they had to just throw the ball a ton. That's where they have problems. And yeah, Texas could force some turnovers, and their secondary is very talented. So if they play up to that level, it can be a little bit tricky.
Yeah, it's a game where you just don't want them to get loose in special teams or like a pick six. Like, that's where they could really flip the script and cause you to get in a little bit of trouble. I don't worry about them just head up, like, offense for offense, defense for defense. It's those little special plays that can occur. And look, Baylor can break those off too. I mean, as much as you worry about UT's return game, they're looking at Treston Ebner going, we can't let this guy beat us. And, you know, as much as you're worried about Xavier Worthy, they're looking at Tyquan Thornton go, we can't let this guy, you know.
Yeah.
So they're both kind of looking out for the same things. And Alpha Needle, I did want to make mention, Braves-Astros should be one heck of a World Series. I am looking forward to that. So, good luck to whoever you're rooting for and for all the Braves and Astros fans out there. But, yeah, I mean, their defense has some talent, but the ability to get turnovers is certainly, you know, one they do a good job of. They do a good job of, is what I should say. So, yeah, not the only scary thing about them, but you're right. They do kind of bog down the Baylor offense more often than not, it seems
it's
like.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
Yeah. And they've had 2 weeks to prepare, so. Scotty B as well, what should the game plan be against that explosive Texas offense?
Yeah, so I think the game plan is to kind of keep Bijan in check while trying to not give up the big plays, which is something that Dave Aranda mentioned.
And I think it's flipped.
Flipped, okay.
Big plays, top on down, and then contain Bijan.
Okay, so on this season, the two times Texas has played a top 50 run defense, which Baylor is 47th, so they're inside the top 50. Bijan Robinson has ran the ball 60 times for 266 yards and 3 touchdowns. Now, those are decent numbers. Those are pretty good. So 1.5 touchdowns per game, 133 yards. That's pretty good, but he's really their main running threat and only running threat, it seems. In most of those games, that has been the case. He gets a ton of carries. I mean, that's 30 carries. So I think Baylor should be able to keep him under 150 yards. And if you can keep Bijan under 150 yards rushing and you don't give up yards to other people, I think they're going to be in a great situation to win this game. And that leads you to the big plays. Can you keep those big plays more like the BYU big plays instead of touchdown big plays? I think those are the key things for me. So I would take away Bijan as much as I can at first, and trust your secondary. And if things start going awry, then you might have to allow Bijan to have more room and try to keep things in front of you more.
The way Aranda kind of put it, he said, starting top on down, because I think you talk about those early blow-ups by Texas where they jump out in front of people, and it's them hitting like two or three big plays, and then they start getting into Bijan. And then, like last week or against Oklahoma, teams come roaring back, and guess who disappears in the second half? Bijan, yeah. Because they can't just sit back and run the football. So if you can withstand that early wave of the big plays, including from him, you don't allow them to just settle into a groove and just pound you with such a talent. He's going to be involved throughout the game one way or the other, but teams have found ways to kind of limit his effectiveness.
Yeah, and one thing I will mention, the reason why I kind of view it the way that I do especially, is similar to BYU in that I'm not really scared. I know Jaren Hall had the big run, but he's not a crazy good athlete, and Casey Thompson is even less of an athlete, and those guys typically struggle against Baylor. I mean, look at Jared Daigie. He was a statue because he was standing in the pocket trying to make these deep balls happen, and it just did not work out. And so I think if you force Casey Thompson to sit in there and have to search for the big play all game, he's going to turn the ball over and he's going to get sacked, especially as Baylor has gotten better creating pressure on the quarterback. So that's another area to look at is, if they do try to take deep play shots all game, that's going to leave them susceptible to turning the ball over and fumbles and sacks and Casey Thompson just struggling in general.
Which player, in y'all's opinion, for Baylor men's basketball needs to step up now more with Langston Love out for the season?
Oh, man. I mean, I would say...
Oh, and anyways, I appreciate and keep up the good work as well as Sikkim. Scotty B, as always, thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you, Scotty. I think it's still Kendall Brown. I know they don't play the same position, but I viewed Langston kind of as the eighth or ninth guy. And so I just think it's more emphasis on, they're not giving up as much playing time. So for me, it's either Kendall Brown or LJ Cryer. LJ cementing himself as that, other scorer in the backcourt. But Kendall Brown, as far as the defensive side, I think they're really going to count on him with Langston out, because I felt like Langston could come in and give you some good work on the defensive side at times.
Yeah, I didn't mention that earlier, but unfortunate news about Langston Love. Getting injured on Saturday during practice or scrimmage
against A&M. Yeah. Had 13 points in that game before he got hurt.
Yeah, and that's just really unfortunate, that news dropping on Monday morning. So best wishes up to Langston Love. And I saw the coaches and stuff commenting that he'll be back better than ever, and I'm sure he will be, but that's just still tough. So good luck to him.
San Antonio kid right there, 2-0.
There you go.
Sad to see it.
There you go. Bear 1991, I heard Bryce Petty say it this week, and I agree. Is it time to make Abram Smith an every down back and give him 25 plus carries a game? That's from Sikkim 365 Radio. Bryce said, he's like, hey, give Abram, 20 whatever plus carries a game. He loves watching Abram and the style and what he's able to do and open up. And he especially, commented on just how the team reacts to Abram Smith. Like when he's breaking off those tough runs, like you look at the sideline, and the sideline's getting fired up and the team's getting fired up and they kind of feed off that. That was Bryce Petty from yesterday's show, from Monday's show. And he talked about a lot of different things, Baylor. But is it time to make Abram Smith an every down back, 25-plus carries a game?
25-plus carries, as long as Tressen Ebner is getting 10 carries.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. I mean, listen, Abram Smith's averaging 7.5 yards per carry. That's ridiculous. He's been so efficient, so good. Just he's been so productive. But then you look a little bit down the list, and Tressen Ebner is averaging 6.5 yards per carry. I mean, the thing of it is these two work so well together, and I don't want them to go out there and give Abram 35 carries and then his body wears down and then all of a sudden you don't have him anymore when you could have avoided it by giving Tressen Ebner carries. And Ebner's been a great running back, even in a scheme that maybe doesn't fit him perfect. He's been so good in it and so explosive. So, yeah, you can give Abram 25 carries, as long as Ebner is getting 10 carries as well. I don't want to see a game where Abram Smith is getting 35 carries and Ebner has like two carries. That makes no sense for this offense.
Yeah, he said the numbers suggest he's a top five running back in college football right now and deserves the maximum volume of carries. Treston is a great running back in his own right, but no one fits this offense better than Abram. And I agree with that. I mean, Abram is a much better fit. I don't think they're going to go away from Treston. I mean, Randy even said they're looking at reversing their roles, if anything. He talked about how they're probably, you know, entering the bye week looking at themselves going that they're too much in a comfort zone and they need to shake things up. So you're going to see more Treston Ebner out of the backfield. I think you're going to see more Abram Smith, or you're going to see more Treston in the backfield, trying to be more of a north-south runner. And I think you're going to see more Abram coming out of the backfield, doing more of what Treston does at times to keep defenses off balance and to, you know, shake things up a little bit. So that was something that Aranda did mention. Like, Treston's not going anywhere. And if anything, they're working on improving what each other does best. Does that make sense?
No, it does, because you're able to confuse a defense when Abram Smith is catching passes.
He talked about how predictive it is. Like, there's Abram, we know what's coming now. Yeah. And so they looked at, when they self-scouted, they looked at some of their tendencies, and I think that's one of the things that they noticed is like, oh, Ebner's in? Well, this means this and this. And so they're looking to flip that up.
Yeah, and I just think they're both good running backs. And up to this point in the season, look how healthy both are right now. Mm-hmm. Knock on wood, but there's a reason they are, because they've been able to split carries with both of them and make it this two-headed monster. And I don't think Baylor should go away from that. They've had so much success with that. So I like getting both involved. So, no, I don't want to see Abram out there just killing his body, getting the ball 35 times when they're up by a ton. And I know you said 25, but saying lead back role implies that when Baylor is up, you're only giving him the ball. Like, he only comes out when he's tired. And I don't think that should be the case.
Ashley Hodge, with Mac McClung gone, what overrated guard from our enemies is Grayson going to overhype? A, Remy Martin, B, Marcus Carr, C, Mike Miles, D, Nigel Pack, E, Avery Anderson, or F, Duke transfer Jordan Goldwire?
Well, Ashley loves himself some Avery Anderson. He fell in love with Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who Baylor played a few years ago. So Ashley has some of his favorites. And then, you know, I liked Mac McClung before he ended up somehow at Texas Tech. And so none of these guys on the list I really like very much, but I know Ashley loves himself some Avery Anderson, Nigel Pack. He's talked about both of them a ton, and I think those are probably his top two favorite players in the Big 12 for basketball, even more than any of the Baylor players. So it's just one of those things, you know. He loves opposing players.
Well, thank you, Ashley, very much for the question in the mailbag this week. Stat Boy, what is the Grin and Bear, of our current 19 football commits, do we know which ones will be enrolling in January? And then he listed them out.
Yeah, I posted this on the premium side, some of the early enrollees. And there's still a lot of time. A lot of guys don't even know if they're able to or not yet because of credits and classes transferring. And I don't really want to release the names publicly of the early enrollees just because I don't want to give that away.
Okay, so if you're a premium member, which it looks like you are, Grin and Bear, you can find that on the premium side of things.
I posted it today. So there are five or six. So there's five or six currently that I know are going to early enroll, and I think there maybe could be one or two more to add to the list.
So there you go. There's a little reason if you're on the fence about joining the premium. There's a little, there you go, a little cookie a little crumb.
Yeah.
Go follow that trail. All right, Stat Boy, what is the most yards Baylor gets against UT on one play?
How about a 55-yard reception for Tyquan Thornton?
I've got 60-plus in my head for some reason. I don't know why.
Who's that getting it? Ebner?
No. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know yet. I'm thinking kind of Tyquan for some reason.
That's where I was going too. The other ones are, I could see Ebner getting it, and then the sneaky one who could just kind of sneak out there, Drew Estrada, who we've seen have some explosive plays.
Sure. Yep. But yeah, for some reason, 60 plus and Tyquan's just popping in my head, and I'll go with it. Thank you, Stat Boy. Coach DeBroker, predict how many teams in the Big 12 will be ranked at the end of the season. What conferences will we be behind and ahead of?
Ooh. Okay. So I think just based on kind of how things have played out, it's going to be four. With Texas potentially sneaking in if they can pull some upsets.
This is the kind of game where whoever wins this game probably ends up in the top 25 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Very well.
Baylor could still end up there with three very winnable games.
Be hard, though. We know they don't get respect. So, yeah, like, they have to, like, win as much as possible to remain in the top 25.
Like, 9-3, and they'll be ranked. But outside of that, they won't be. So, in Texas, on the other hand, if they go 8-4, they'll be ranked. Or 7-5, they'll be ranked.
I said in my column, like, outside of the Arkansas game, I mean, if, you know, they deserve to lose that game. But if they hold on to leads, like, they're easily top 10 right now.
Yeah.
Like, easily.
So, I would go with 4. With Texas being the wild card of potentially being a fifth. Now, as far as the other conferences go, where does Baylor rank? I think where's the Big 12 rank? I think the SEC is going to have the most, just kind of the way the
standings
have
gone. Because it's rigged, for one.
It's very rigged. That no doubt about that. And then the Big 10, and then the Big 12 is kind of how I view it.
Yeah, SEC, I mean, and look, none of SEC fans are listening to this anyways. I wouldn't imagine, but... it's something we've talked about on the radio show. Watch how teams drop from the SEC when they lose versus how teams drop from other conferences. Like, Oklahoma State dropped 7 spots.
Yeah.
They barely lost to Iowa State.
On the road.
In controversy. And they dropped 7 spots. Like, their first loss. And meanwhile, you're like, oh, well, Iowa State's in the top 25 again. Well, shoot, even more reason why they shouldn't have dropped. You know, I could go on and on all day about that. But if their name was Georgia, they'd have dropped a spot. You know what I mean? Like, that's just – it really is – yes, it really is rigged. I mean, watch how teams fall when they're not SEC versus how they fall when they are. Yeah. And there is a difference.
Well, and how they rise. Like, A&M won on a game-winning field goal against Alabama at home, at Kyle Field, and jumped all the way up to, like, number 16 in the country, whereas Purdue, who went on the road and beat Iowa by like 20 points, barely got into the top 25.
Yeah.
The same record.
But what also happened in that was A&M jumps up, Alabama barely falls because what? They barely lost the game. Well, what happened to Oklahoma State?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing.
It keeps it all inflated, too, because you can be like, oh, we can't drop them because the conference is so good.
It's rigged.
And then, yeah, it's so rigged.
And so that's why you have, like, all those years until people finally saw through it of, like, there's 17 SEC teams in the top 20, you know, like, at any given time. Yes, because they never fall out, and then every time one of them wins and upsets one in there, that team doesn't fall out, but the team that won jumps in. So now one of your best teams loses – but you gained a top 25 team.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. But that's the pulse for you. And that's why it's, you know, I could go on a rant about that all day long, but it's just so obvious how that goes. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of the Big 12, they're not going to get that respect, but 4-5. 5 would be the max and would be a really good year for the Big 12. And I agree with you. I think the SEC is the top as far as the best teams. They have the most of the best teams. And then the Big 10, I think you got to give them a little bit of an edge. Although the Big 12 is going to be really fun. And then, they're above the Pac-12.
And the ACC. Give me a break.
It's not even close. Yeah. It's not even close.
With Clemson being as bad as they are, the ACC is way down.
Let's see here. Let's finish this off. Thank you, Coach. Bearcats, we haven't used Gary's running abilities as much as I thought we would this year, mainly because the running and passing game has been efficient. Do you think the coaching staff will change things up for this game and have Gary use his legs more often? Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Bearcats. We appreciate you.
So I've mentioned this a couple times, but first of all, I don't think this offense is predicated on the quarterback's ability to run the football. We saw that with Zach Wilson. He just was, you know, he'd ran when he had to. It was more about being in the pocket, completing passes downfield, and running the football. And I also think there's a chance that we might have overrated Gary's running ability
a little bit. I definitely believe that.
I think we overrated
it. I believe that for like a couple of years now.
Yeah, and I think we all saw the UTSA game, and then it was just like, he's like RG3, and it's like, no, he's not RG3. Does not have the speed, and nor does he really have, in my opinion, the running instincts to that level. Like, you'll see him at times, there's a hole, or just you power through and you get a yard and he's wanting to dance outside. And you're like, wait, what? You're 230 pounds. Like, just hit the hole. But that's all instinctual. That's instinct running. Now, I think he's a capable runner, as we've seen. But I think we've overrated a little bit to thinking that Gary's a guy who can go out there and run for 100 yards any given day. And it's like, no, he's got to have running room if that's going to happen, and just a wide open thing. So I just don't think that's in their game plan. I truly don't. And in part because it's not in this offensive scheme, and in part because I don't think Gary's an elite runner. I haven't seen that up to this point.
I don't believe at all that he's an elite runner. He's not exceptionally fast. He's capable of giving you like a 12-yard touchdown run, but he's not like a 32-yard touchdown run type of
unless
a guy.
It's just wide
yeah,
open.
Unless
yeah,
unless it's like a there's no like it's him versus nobody. He's more of a 3-yard touchdown run type of a guy. What he's also done as of late, and I think they've been a little bit hesitant, he's taking some big pops.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a big dude, but he's very upright, and so he takes some big hits, and he took one against BYU that you're kind of like, uh-oh, like, just be careful with that. So I think they're probably – I mean, he's taken more than one, so I think they're probably, you know, being mindful of that as well. And I also think just sometimes he's probably had the ability to break off some runs, but for whatever reason, he doesn't do it. Either he waits in the pocket too long and then decides to run and it's too late – or, you know, he just sits in the pocket and throws it. And I've seen plenty of plays where it's like the whole middle of the field's wide open and you need 3 yards, like run, and he'll wait for the pass to open up. So, yeah, I don't think that anybody should go into these games like considering him some great valuable running threat. I think he can score from close and pick you up a first down on occasion. But in terms of, yeah, he's not – Vince Young or anybody no, along those lines by any stretch of the imagination. He's a better passer than he is a runner. I mean, that's kind of crazy, but he is. And I say kind of crazy because that's just not necessarily what people expected.
Yeah.
You know. All right, let's see here. Oso Primo, special teams for the Horns seems to be a threat more so than any other opponent. And Aranda said as much. Plus, we have a good reputation for special teams play, compare and contrast.
I mean, they have a really good kicker. Baylor has a really good kicker. Their kicker's been around a lot longer, Cameron Dicker. He's made some big kicks for them, and he's been really good this year. 8 of 10 on field goals, 34 out of 34 on extra points, and he's also their punter. I mean, he does it all for them, and he's had a really, really good year. But I think Isaac Power is an amazing punter. I've been seeing that guy. I mean, he has been awesome this year, and he was actually a guy that I think people were surprised when I had him on my preseason All Big 12 ballot for punter, because I've seen flashes and he's had a really nice year. So I think it's pretty even in that category. I would probably take Dicker in the kicking game just because he's done it longer, he's a little more proven. But as far as the return game goes, give me Tristan Ebner every day of the week. And as far as blocks go, neither team has really been efficient this year at blocking much. If anything, Baylor's caused more penalties than gotten blocks this season. So I think it could be a factor, but I think that the edge is only so – it's slim on both sides. So they each have good things that they're doing, but I wouldn't give the edge either way right now.
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty evenly matched, as you said, and both are fully capable of hurting the other. But I think both are going to come in with that very much on their minds of how much the other side can hurt them in special teams. So I think that's going to be a huge focus. And if anybody does get loose in special teams – it should be because it's just a tremendous freaking play, or it's a bad mistake that could cost you the game in my mind. Yep. So special teams will be a really important area that you don't want to let the opponent get loose at all. But there's certainly that potential for both sides. So thank you for the question there. Oso Primo and Doc Crowell will close us out. Who takes home MVP awards versus UT this week?
Okay, I'm gonna go with Abram Smith as the MVP for the offense. I guess we're just doing one. So, yeah, I'll go with Abram Smith for my MVP this week.
I'll do a defensive one, too. I'm going to go Jalen Petrie, and I'm going to go, Abram Smith.
Okay, I'll go. I guess I'll give a defense. I'll go Terrell Bernard.
All right.
We're taking the usual suspects this
week.
Yeah,
but I just think with Petrie and what they're going to want to be doing defensively, yeah, he's going to be a huge – I mean, he always is, but always. I think he really is going to be, like, a big factor in what they do this week.
I want to see 2019 Trell Bernard, because what we saw from him against Texas on that day, special.
Yeah.
What he did to Sam Ellinger, I mean, he completely took Sam Ellinger out of that game. It was so impressive. So if he can bring that again, they're going to be in a world of hurt, especially if Petrie keeps playing the way he has. It makes them very, very tough to score on.
Who of the freshmen has seen the most playing time?
Has been seeing the most playing time. I couldn't even tell you because it's been so limited.
Probably Hal Presley is one of them?
Yeah, he's one of them. I mean, are we counting like playing time freshmen, or are we counting
I'd say true freshmen. Yeah.
Just true freshmen? I mean, yeah. I mean, it's pretty much Hal Presley if you're talking a true freshman. He's the only one that's seeing any significant playing time.
Yeah. I mean, redshirt freshman is what, like shoot, I'd have to look at the roster to even know who those are, because I started thinking Devin Neal, but he's a sophomore. and the rosters are so screwed up.
I mean, he's technically a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
so he would be, he'd be on the list technically.
But he's also technically a sophomore. So, I know. I mean, who knows what anybody is?
It's weird. Tay McWilliams, he's played a lot.
He's maybe a redshirt freshman or a sophomore. We don't know.
He's a redshirt. Yeah, he's a redshirt. It's just weird that whole dynamic. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Baylor's not playing a lot of freshmen because they're loaded with their veteran guys. It's a good thing and a good problem to have. I know everyone wants to see these freshmen flash, but they need to develop. They need to get these guys developed. And I will say, out of the bye week, if you're going to see maybe one freshman take a step forward, you might see it this week, because the bye week is usually a great prep time for freshmen to really get themselves back into the fold. I'm curious when Anthony Iñánwu is going to come back. He was a guy who I think was probably going to play a factor at the jack position. I still think Garmon Randolph was probably going to be the starter, but they probably would have been co-starters at some point, with Ashton Logan also playing a lot. So he's the one that I'm kind of looking at. Like, when he gets healthy, what kind of role will he have? Because we knew he was going to have some role at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I'm looking at the freshman. Really, the only great candidate would be...
Oh, Isaiah Hankins. What are we doing?
Yeah.
He's the starter as a true freshman. He's the guy as a freshman that's been playing the most.
Yeah, it would be Isaiah Hankins, and then it would be Hal Presley. Monterey Baldwin's played a little bit as well. But, you know, yeah, it's got to be Hankins. I mean, just in terms of contributions go, and, you know, looking at redshirt freshmen, yeah, there's not a whole lot of options there. I mean, a bunch of guys who are, like, playing, but not, like, a ton of guys who are just, like, super impactful.
None are starters.
No.
I don't see a single starter.
Yeah, I mean, this is an old team, basically. This is an old team. But, yeah, there's a couple guys. But Isaiah Hankins would be your answer also. Let's see, or Doc, excuse me. And finally, last question. This also comes from Doc. What would you predict the starting O-line to be next year, and will they be better with another year under their belts, even though there will be more young guys across the board?
I mean, there might be more young guys across the board. We'll see who takes advantage of, you know, an extra year, because I think Jacob Gall could play another year, I believe. But if we're just – okay, so if we're going to go off of not – guessing on what guys end up doing, then how about we just kind of stick with, I mean, we're just going to assume that everyone's leaving. So Galvin's gone, Keith's gone.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, well, if they lose everyone up front, which, you know, Grant Miller, I think, will still have another year. I think he's just a junior, I believe.
He's got two, I believe, yeah.
Okay, so he'll be back. Gavin Byers will be back. So then I think Elijah Ellis will be the starter at the other tackle position. So Byers and Ellis will be your starters at tackle. Grant Miller, I think, will slide, again, depending on Gall. So we're assuming Gall, Xavier Newman, Khalil Keith, Connor Galvin are all gone. I think Grant Miller will probably be the center. So then you got to fill those two guard positions. I think Micah Mascua is one that you have to keep an eye on. I think he'd probably take over a starting role at the guard spot. And then I think the other one would probably... They need one guy to come back at least. I mean, I'm looking at this. Technically, Grant Miller's listed as a senior.
He is. I mean, that's the thing. It's so hard to know with rosters right now. Like, I do this Earl Campbell Award every week, so I have to look at all these rosters and, you know, make sure guys are this classification or whatever. And, like, every school lists their guys differently. You know, some do it like, he's a fifth year this, and then some are like, I don't know how to explain it, but they all list the same things differently. And then some have already accounted for guys, you know, and like, and some haven't adjusted for guys. And so I just don't know what the hell anybody is anymore. I don't know how else to say it, you know.
I don't think they're all leaving. But again, if I'm just guessing, I mean, we're literally guessing. So that means Grant Miller's out too. So then we're talking Byers, Ellis at tackle, Connor Heffernan at center, Tate Williams at guard, Micah Mascua at guard. That would be their starting offensive line. But again, I firmly believe at least three of those guys will be back, the seniors. I can't imagine they all are gone, and Baylor's left with seven guys on their current roster at the offensive line spot, and then whatever they bring in the freshman class. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, well, that would be difficult to have to deal with, so hopefully they've got that in mind, and that was one of the things in recruiting this past week that they kept in mind as well, is figuring out this roster and what the heck it's going to look like next year.
For sure. And Doc asked if they'll be better with another year under their belt. If the starting unit I just named is the starting unit next year, no chance will they be better than they are this year. But again, I don't expect that. And if that is the case, then they will definitely bring in a transfer, because that's a lot of young guys. That's redshirt freshmen that you're trusting to go be starters multiple. I don't believe that's going to be the case at all.
All right, so thank you, Doc, for that question, and that will bring us to a close this week. We got Baylor and Texas coming up this weekend, big-time opportunity for the Bears and a home game, and so if you're one of those that's actually going to be in attendance, show up and be loud and hopefully stay all the way through to congratulate the Bears. They walk off the field victorious, and if not, well, then this is going to be a bummer of a podcast next week if they do fall to Texas, no matter how it happens, just because – who wants to do that? Who wants to lose to Texas?
Yeah, definitely not. So are we going to get our predictions in real quick before we end it out? Okay, so the first game of the week is actually Texas taking on Baylor at 11 a.m. on ABC. Another 11 a.m. game. Texas coming off the bye week. Baylor as well. This is a big matchup in the Big 12. Who do you got?
Baylor. I mean, Baylor. I don't have any qualms about it.
Okay, I got Baylor in this one, too. I got them winning it 33-24. I think it'll be somewhat close, but I like the Bears winning this one. Next matchup on ESPN Plus, Iowa State travels to Morgantown to take on West Virginia. The Mountaineers got their act together and beat TCU on the road last week. Iowa State continues to have some momentum. They beat Oklahoma State at home last week. And who do you got in this one?
I'll take Iowa State for pretty much every game they're playing the rest of the way, except for Oklahoma. I think they're going to be right there in the mix, and that's why Baylor can't really afford a loss, because they actually had the tiebreaker over Iowa State, but you drop a game or two, and all of a sudden Iowa State leaps you in the standings, and you're left on the outside looking in. But I think it's a good thing that Baylor played them when they did. I also think Baylor could go toe-to-toe with them again. Everybody started to – like, I saw a power rankings thing some person did. They had Iowa State at number 2 in the Big 12. I'm like, I mean, like, if you're basing it off of last weekend, and maybe if you're basing it off the end of the year, but – I mean, something needs to be said for Baylor beating them straight up. So it's almost like that's been forgotten already, because they're starting to get a lot of love.
Well, September doesn't count for Iowa State.
I guess, yeah. I mean, you know, Brocktober or whatever. But, like, that game happened, and that game, Baylor was clearly the winner. But, yeah, I'm taking Iowa State hands down.
Yeah, Brocktober is here, and Iowa State's looking much better. They look like a very dominant team at the moment, and they're going to dominate West Virginia in this one. I think the final score will be 37-17. I like Iowa State to win this one. On ABC, Texas Tech coming in after losing their head coach, Matt Wells, after losing to Kansas State. They take on Oklahoma, who had a shocking game against Kansas. Yeah, they won, but man, they looked bad. Who do you got in this one?
I'm taking OU. You know, if Texas Tech is able to throw it around a little bit, maybe they can make this interesting, but I'm taking Oklahoma.
Yeah, this is going to be bad for Tech. I think Oklahoma's going to get it figured out, and I like the Sooners winning this one 44-17. The next matchup on ESPNU at 2:30, TCU travels to Manhattan to take on Kansas State. TCU coming off the loss to West Virginia. They're trending in the wrong direction. Kansas State coming off the narrow win over Texas Tech. Who do you got?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like TCU's got to rally the troops, right? I mean, they can't afford to go on the road and lose another game, but I'm going to go K-State. I mean, they looked better the past weekend when I watched. I mean, overall, they looked better than TCU did. You know, it was mostly a second half showing, but still, they looked better. They're going to be at home. They seem to be confident right now, and TCU seems to be the complete opposite, and that defense isn't changing overnight and suddenly becoming the great defenses of old in Fort Worth. So I'll go K-State, but, you know, that's one of those games where I could see it, you know, either way, really.
Yeah, the Wildcats can run the football, and they can stop the run. Yeah. That is bad news for TCU. Yeah. So I got Kansas State, especially at home. I think they're going to win this one 31-20 as they kind of try to get back on track in the Big 12.
I just don't think that they're, like, clearly better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think K-State's, like, such a sharp team that they just think this is a no-brainer for me. But, yeah. I mean, it should be a K-State win. There's no doubt.
Yeah, I think if it was in Fort Worth, I'd be more inclined to choose TCU. Yeah. But I'm going to take K-State this week. And then the last game on FS1, kind of a snooze fest. Kansas travels to Oklahoma State to take on the Cowboys. Kansas coming off their best performance of the year in the loss to Oklahoma. Oklahoma State coming off the loss to Iowa State. They're trying to get back on track. Who do you got?
The Cowboys are going to name their score like everybody does against Kansas, but give it up to KU for that effort last week against Oklahoma. Been saying week after week, you know, it's just about getting better if you're the Jayhawks, and you know, Lance Leipold's doing a good job of just chipping away, and you know, we'll see if he has the patience to follow through before another job comes calling that might be a little less stressful. But, you know, if he's there for a while, I think he's going to do some good things with that KU football program. But it ain't happening this weekend. They're going to get drilled.
Yeah, I like Oklahoma State in this one, 31-10. I think the Cowboys get back on track.
I don't even know if KU scores, you know.
There's a chance.
Yeah, but
garbage time. Garbage time scores.
Yeah, that's most likely when it would come, or like the first drive of the game. You know, get that out of there. But, no, KU is they got an upset monster coming their way this weekend after that loss last weekend to Iowa State. What a great game that was, you know, really overall.
Two very good teams.
Yeah, they are. And Baylor's 1-1 against those teams and now looking to go 1-0 against Texas. Man, should be a great atmosphere. Should be just a great football game, period, at McLean Stadium on Saturday. So looking forward to it. And, of course, we'll have a lot more buildup and stories and podcasts and all that good stuff going on Sikkim 365 Radio and Sikkim365.com. If you're not already, join and become a premium member. Maybe gift a family member, a relative, a fellow Baylor alum, a subscription as a holiday gift or something, just to throwing that out there. But you can check out much more content over on the website, especially in that premium section. Grayson, anything before we go this week?
No, nothing really to add. It's going to be a really fun atmosphere and a fun game, and I encourage Baylor students, Baylor fans, get to this game. That you have a top 15 team right now in Baylor, top 20, I guess, and they're a team that's continuing to rise, and they need support. Even at 11 a.m., can't have a dead atmosphere in McLean Stadium on Saturday.
For the diehards, I'm not speaking to you, but just a few months ago, people were getting all scared about life without the Big 12. And you suddenly have your spot secured, and a few months later, I'm just not going to show up to, you know, biggest game of the year, McLean Stadium. Was it Blizzard? No. Is it the price? No. What is it? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but I know this team deserves some incredible support. And, you know, it's just funny how fleeting things can be, you know, just uncertainty of the summertime, and now here you fast forward and things are a lot more certain and things are a lot more sturdy, and just I don't know, man, it's a weird deal. But shout out to the diehards and those who are going to be screaming and yelling at McLean Stadium this weekend in green and gold, and we will talk to you all coming up again next week and throughout the week. But for Grayson Grundhafer, for Jack and Armstrong behind the scenes as well, I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim 365 Radio and Sikkim365.com.